Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now. Radio network that focus on solutions in the black community presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops and computers, you could dial in if you have a question or comment at 516-531-9540 and press 1. Number is 516-531-9540. The lineup for the week, as usual. We start off on Tuesday with my show, Black Urban America, and I'm your host, Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne and Justin. On Thursdays, we have Port of Harlem with Mr. Wayne A. Young. And he has a magazine, too. And on Saturday, we finish up with Carl Snead with Provocative Thought. Our show starts at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our website is WeTalkProductions/team. That's WeTalkProductions/. Now, this is, will be my final show for the year. And it's been a very good year for We Talk Productions. And we have a couple people that have been added to the team. And I think 21. It's going to be a much more productive year. And let me tell you, all you business owners and what have you, and self-employed people, I will be contacting you. I will be contacting you to see if we can build up a business relationship. And that's going to be a priority for 2021. Our guest for tonight, he's a businessman, an engineer, also he's an African history scholar, he's a global researcher. And this evening, we're going to be talking about a subject, a topic, that probably we talk on Black Urban America about 60% of the time. Why? Why? Because it's about to be 2021, and we still have the issue of racism front and center, smack dab in our face in every avenue of America. So I'd like to invite on the show tonight Mr. Rudolph Smith. Good evening, sir.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Oh, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. How about yourself?
How your holidays been so far?
Well, you know what, Kwanzaa, it's been, I work during the holidays. It's been good. It's been good.
Let me say that.
You know, with family and stuff like that. How about you?
Oh, yeah, that's always great. With the family, hung out. My grandkids, and that was really wonderful.
Great, great. I guess all three of us have something in common. We have grandchildren. But Michonne, your grandchildren are young, though, right?
Well, I have.
Oh, my youngest one is 5 months.
See, I don't have babies. No, well, I don't have no babies. Yeah, I have no babies. I have adults.
Yeah, I got one 18.
Yeah. Okay, let's get right into it. You know, like I said in my introduction, to be 2021, you would think American society and the global world will be more far ahead than we normally are. A lot of people, especially in the political world, say we have made progress, but we still have more progress to be made. But if you speak to the average black man and woman, they feel that racism is alive and well. And you can look at some of our conditions and see that it is alive and well. I like to start off with it. In the workplace, let's start off in the workplace.
Okay.
It's racism, I heard people say, because of promotions, and we got black CEOs now, we have black chairmen, we have black directors, whatever. Do you think racism is improving at the workplace, Mr. Smith?
To a certain degree, yeah, like you just mentioned, CEOs and stuff like that. But this is caused by a continuous push and an organized effort like Black Lives Matter or even the Remembrance of the Civil Rights Movement. There are blacks who fought what I call corporate racism inside the company. I myself had to saw the first black mechanic work on an airplane and there. And so, yeah, at that time they had EEOCs, and this is 70s, and we were standing on the shoulders.
EEOC, right? The Equal Opportunity Commission, right.
Right. They had those at those times, and they had brothers and that was supposed to, oversee that. And some of them were, I'd have to say, sellouts, kind of in a way. But
well, look at Clarence Thomas. Look at Clarence Thomas. At one time. Yeah, At one time, Brother Thomas, I hate to call him a brother, but, you know, Brother Thomas was the head of the EEOC, and now he's a Supreme Court Justice. Look at him now. He has not yet. Now, he'd been on the Supreme Court since the early 90s. He has not yet voted pro anything when it comes to black folks in America. So I can see the EEOC was a failure. I don't even know what they do. It's just a bunch of.
Well, I don't think they even have it. They don't even have it that much now. Now it's kind of incorporated into human resources in a way, and you have a lot of minorities running the human resources department now. Matter of fact, you talked about racism in the corporation now. Since Black Lives Matter came about. I know a particular company. They developed they had a Black Lives pin and a Black Lives Matter, a little badge to put on, and they wanted to have people talk about race inside the company, and don't feel bad about it, and get used to where they can talk about it. But because they had put this out as an info, there were a lot of whites complained about how could you do that? I enjoy working for this, the whole thing. So. You know, see, I came along in this particular company, United Airlines. I don't want to mention the name. That there was still what I call the Confederate flag on toolboxes and stuff. You see, and so those are the kind of things that we saw coming up. And so there were quite a few brothers, me included, that filed the consent decree against these corporations that had what I call these programs that held blacks back. They hold you back for anything. Oh, you don't talk good English, or you can't do a rule or some of these simple, stupid jobs that they have. And now you see blacks and minorities in all these jobs. So I think that any improvement in the, especially for blacks, whites see it as a threat to white supremacy.
Mm.
You see,
who you think should be responsible? Like yourself, you led a movement on your in a job and everything. Who do you think should be responsible to, if there is overt racism, you know, because to me, I believe there will always be racism at the workplace. That's why I feel that we should get our own businesses, just become entrepreneurs and what have you. That's the way, to me, to defeat racism at the workplace and everything. But who you think is responsible, who should be responsible to address racism at the workplace?
Well, like I said, it's actually up to the workers, blacks themselves, to mount the protests, as like I said, as we did. But I think what has happened since we have, attained a few positions and got a little money and the whole thing, and you know, after they killed Martin Luther King, we fell asleep.
And we still sleeping. We woke up during the Trump era. That's why I'm going
now,
to
let
miss
me tell you
Trump. That's why I'm going to miss Trump. I have not seen this much organizing, this much outrage. From black folks since the late 60s, since I was a little boy with the Black Panther Party. And between the Nation of Islam and the Black Panther movement until Trump got elected, we was in hibernation. We was hibernating.
Right.
Especially during the Obama era. They kicked our butts. And we even had black folks going around saying, there's no more racism. There's no more racism. I just want to say, what are you smoking? What are you sniffing?
Yes.
And it's one thing that President Trump did. He put it right there in front of our face and had us react. And I'm afraid now that we're going to go back to sleep for another decade or two.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Now, the fact that he did that shows that it was there all the time. We fell asleep on. Now, we had leaders like Martin Malcolm and people like that who had taken over from the struggle of the African slaves to gain freedom in America, and they continued that. And up until that time, we always had leaders that could unite black people in a monolithic kind of protest and movement. So after King and Malcolm, everybody died, and the laws got changed where, you know, they had to stand next to us or work next to us, the whole thing, and we got a little money.
And
ball
live
houses.
Next to us. Hey, you know what?
Right.
I'm going to say this. I know this goes, I'm going to get a lot of pushback, like I usually do. Right. Civil Rights Act was the worst act ever for black folks. What it did, it benefited other cultures, white women, Asians. It did benefit us. Oh, there was some individual conquests, but as a collective, it did not improve our status in American society. We was better off. Oh, I'm really gonna kick it now. We were better off during the segregated era because we had our own hotels. Check this out. I was listening to one of our hosts, Wayne Young, right? We had airports. I didn't know that. We had airplanes. Individual own now. We had airports. He had a guy on his show that he don't have it anymore. Well, back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 40s, and 50s, we had our own little airports. You know, it was American Airlines, but we had our own airports, our own engineers, our own taxi cab companies, our own everything. And the Civil Rights Act demolished all of that.
Well, let me say this.
To me,
in
my perspective.
Okay. All right, but so what I want to say is that the fact that my dad and mom own business, cafe, cab stand, this whole thing, but what happens is because of the caste system we were in, and not only in the racial, but also in the business arena, it limited our ability to get capital from the banks and all these things. So you had to pass these laws, and you had to redline the whole thing. So you couldn't expand these businesses. You might have had business, but you could only go so far. Now, Black Wall Street was different. That Black Wall Street got this money from a source that was black. And so one of the things I have thought about quite a bit in order to expand, now, as long as we always have to get our capital from the white banks or whatever, we all be limited. But if Africa became a source of money that blacks could invest in the United States, then now you have a power base of capital that's coming to you. So we have to expand our idea about the limitations of our ability to create these businesses. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I understand what you mean about it was worse, but the black the movement for black people has never been just about black people. It's all about been about that what we call that beloved community that included everyone. And so.
And that's our downfall. That's our downfall. You know, we are a loving culture. That's how we became slaves. That's how we let other countries come over to Africa and traded human cattle. Cause by nature, the African, but the African by nature is a loving culture. You know, I mean, we do get pissed off, but of course. Like anybody else, we are a loving culture, and that's our downfall. Why do we want to stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side, with a person, with people that don't like us and never did?
Well, now from the beginning, I could say you said it, but now you're in a system that has been created by a man who put a big giant white Jesus in Brazil over the world, welcoming them to the new America. So the slaves came over. Now, let me use the Congo for an example. In the Congo, which had their own system, the Luba system, they had their own belief in God and the whole thing. Matter of fact, they believed that you could pray to God directly long before the Europeans ever do that, because you know you had to pay the Pope and everybody to get repentant. But they also had a system of chiefdom, and there was a king over the chiefdom, so they had their own culture. Now, when the Europeans came, now they didn't colonize to the 1800s, but slavery started in the 1600s. So you would ask the question, how did they get slaves? Well, there were Africans sold African slaves that had caught the tribal wars and raids to sold them to the Europeans. They sold them to the Europeans. Now, after they decided to take over at the Berlin Conference, they decided to divide Africa and the whole thing. They colonized Africa.
They divided up Africa like it was a pizza.
Yeah, to exploit his resources. And so at the Berlin Conference, they sit down and decided who would get what. And at the same time, when Germany became an imperial power, this was before, you know, they started going to war and stuff. But so what I'm saying is that there were bad business deals. Now, these business deals, and I don't know if they continue to be made because China's over there now, but African kings made bad business deals. Now, a lot of soul, because the gun came into play and because the trickery that was used by Henry Stanley, who was an American and who was a explorer for the King Leopold of Belgium. And plus they had a lobbyist at the United States who lobbied, his name was Henry Stanford, the lobbyist for King Leopold's ownership and colonization of the Congo. And so when they went over and deceived the people, they made them believe that white people had magical powers, right? They had a gun trick where the guy poured the powder into the gun, but he took the bullet and had the African fire on him. Then when he shot at it and he bent down and pulled it out of his boot, he said, see, I'm a spirit. I can't be killed. So that, and also the fact that they was able to give them whiskey and all these little trinkets, they sold this land over to the Belgian king for nothing. So we made a lot of bad business deal, and slavery, selling slaves to the Europeans to build a new world, was a bad business deal.
A very bad business deal. Michonne, do you have a question?
To be one. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Michonne, do you have a question?
I do, but it's a question about the workplace. I want to know, how can a black person get their white colleagues to recognize their own biases?
That's interesting, because they don't like to talk about racism. One of the things that I found in the whites is that white guilt is a very big thing, and that's a lot of reason why they push away. And if you use the word black, they go crazy. A Black Lives Matter, they paint over it. You know, if you use all life matters. I mean, so you use the word black, and so to them, when you focus on black, you're denying them. So they don't want to talk about racial issues or recognize their own biases, because they'll turn around and say, well, you're biased. So they would never sit down and have an honest talk with you about it.
Okay, and I have another question.
Okay.
Why do so many incidences of racism go unreported on the job?
Because it's very hard to prove a lot of times, because, you know, racism has gotten to the point where it's a spiritual kind of thing almost. You know, a lot of times, unless it's just straight out denying you the job and you can prove it by filing a consent decree or some kind of internal complaint where they have to take it to a hearing, like we did in the 60s and the 70s, where the brothers took a lot of stuff to the hearing, and we were able to take it all the way to the Supreme Court and defeat those companies and make them come up with the consent decree, which ultimately the white boy turned around and said that was reverse racism. So it's very hard to prove on the job unless it's just straight up a blade. Now, there had been a case where a white boy got mad because at an Arab, I'll say not an Arab, but a guy who was an Islamic guy. He was a Muslim. And he said that you ragheads, all you need is a gun upside your head. Now, they fired him, the white boy, for saying that. So it had gotten to the point now where just some overt racism does have consequences. Kind of like Karen that goes out and complains about black people, took her phone and all these kinds of things. So this stuff is being filmed now. People see it. Just like they saw the racism of Donald Trump and the evangelicals. Now, a lot of racism is taught in the religion. If you look at the evangelical.
Yeah, Bo Smith, I got questions for that. I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
Jump the gun. Oh, we're going to get to that. I just want to do it. We're going to talk about education for a minute. And we're going to get to the church and racism. Don't worry. We're going to get there. Just let me get into my flow. And speaking of education, do you think that today we have inequalities in our schools?
Oh, yes. Oh yeah. And it goes way back. And growing up as a kid, we got the old books of white kids from the suburbs. A lot of times they were all marked and they were all messed up, but they taught white history. They taught you nothing about black folk.
They still don't.
And I'll give you a fine example now.
Let's stay there for a second. Now, we just got finished talking about improvements on the workplace, what have you. Now, here we have black principals, black superintendents, black commissioners, educational commissioners. How come our schools in predominantly black communities aren't changing their curriculum to be more Afrocentric?
Because they're not your school. There are schools controlled by the county, and that county is controlled by Caucasians.
But hold on.
Now,
there are communities that have black folks in no county seats, that have black mayors, that have black county commissioners, have black school board presidents.
Right.
I'm talking about them. How come that they are not changing these curriculums in our schools to make our children more proud? And maybe that could stop some of the dropout rate and the gang violence. If you get them at kindergarten and first grade and start teaching them about the richness of themselves, how come they, and teach them how to become scientists and engineers and mathematicians and technical people. I mean, like, how come these curriculum aren't changing?
Now, in the 60s, the brothers and sisters did that. A lot of them, they were able to bring black studies in, and able to bring in a lot of things that, of course, like you had the Panthers, you had everybody out there that was pushing these kind of things, Angela Davis, all these kind of people was pushing this kind of stuff. They had programs to feed the kids in the morning so they, you know, could learn. But what happened, like I say, in that falling asleep, you see what I'm saying? And that falling asleep, and America wants to indoctrinate its citizens with white supremacist ideas. They got to the point where they gained a stop putting the kind of finance and money into public schools and whole thing, and got to the point where they actually, by the lack of finance, they actually start controlling what these teachers and stuff could do.
And speaking of teachers. Do you think these teachers have a racial bias towards our black children? They're not supposed to, but you think do you think they do?
Well, like I say, some
even
people
home black teachers, teachers in general, black or white.
Well, you know, a lot of them afraid to even teach. You know, afraid that they might get shot in class. I don't know, but it's the whole
especially
it's
Chicago.
World. Right. See, it's a whole different world. And so, to me, and I even go back to the cops, they were more community orientated. Our teachers were more community orientated. My teacher knew my mama. She talked to my
they
mama.
Went to
and
church
the
together.
I couldn't be goofing up because they knew each other.
Right.
You know. Which
it was real religious.
But even that, I went to, in Oakland, I went to McClellan High School, you know, School of Champions, Bill Russell and everything. And even that, we had a few black study class. They still hadn't really gotten into it. They got into it a little bit after I got out. So we still was into the English, into the history, we went to that. And what I find out and I've learned is that we so busy working on We Shall Overcome and social issues, trying to be a part of the system, the whole thing, that we have no business knowledge. We haven't educated our kids with any business sense of trying to create a wealth base for the whole black community. Now, when we go to Ice Cube and we go to Lil Wang and we go to all of them that want to get with Trump and create a black economic empowerment, you know, like I say, I like Jay-Z's approach. And I think Cube had good intentions, but when you're dealing with a liar and you're dealing with the man who embodied the European idea of macho.
Who said Biden's not a liar? Joe Biden.
Well, I'm saying he is. But he don't, I understand, but he doesn't embody macho masculinity, which is the basis of white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? He's moldable. We can mold him. And plus, he's smart enough to know that he's going to be a transitional president. He's not going to be in a two-term, and he's transitioning to new leadership. So we see the move into the...
We had a virtual meeting with Al Sharpton, the president of the NAACP, the president of the Urban League. This happened like 3 weeks ago, and cussed them leaders out. But when the president of the NAACP said, look, president-elect, I have concerns that you're going to go back on your promises. Joe Biden went off. It's on YouTube.
I'll check it out.
He went off. It was Al Sharpton, the president of the NAACP. It was two other women. It was two women, two black. It was like six black folks, all right? And let me tell you, he went off, raised his voice up. He said, let me tell you, this is the best y'all got. Since y'all been here, oh man, he was just disrespecting him. And let me tell you something, Joe Biden never showed any supremacy. Did the 94 crime bill that sent
all of all of them have that in them, like I'm saying. So, but we have to deal with the one that's moldable, the one that's more moldable. And so all throughout history, every president, everybody we ever dealt with that's in trying to be benevolent to black people, all of them are supremacists. I mean, you go over to Europe, anywhere, that's all white supremacy, okay? And here you're a black man, a system that had an ancestor as a slave to them that they feel superior to, and now you're moving up and you're telling them what you want. And also, you became the president, and you start telling them how they're going to do their foreign policy and how they're going to do their domestic policy, the whole thing. Now, they don't want no black person telling them what to do.
That's what he said. That's right.
So it has always been there, and so we found ways to deal with it. Now the thing is that we get a lot of us. We saying that let's pick up the gun and let's get them and reunite the whole fight. But I'm gonna use this phrase here, which is from a Christian phrase, and that a lot of people, especially ministers, don't feel that blacks could win a military battle with white supremacy, but. They use the phrase, it's not by might, but by my spirit. And that's a Christian phrase. That's just something that God has said in the Bible. So blacks have had to use, as Martin Luther King did, the spirit, the soul movement to expose their hatred and expose their injustices and get a world opinion on this. And I'm going to say this. That you ever heard of a brother called George Washington Williams? I bring this brother's name up because he was the brother who was a writer who exposed the atrocities of King Leopold. And so he was able to bring, because he wrote an open letter, he was able to bring international opinion on this Berlin conference and on what was happening in the Congo. And so that the international community got involved and the Belgian government ultimately took over the Congo and tried to improve the treatment of the Congo. So that's the only way we've been able to do stuff. So we get incremental changes. And I know you feel like if we had stayed, segregated the whole thing, that our changes would have been bigger. You know what I'm saying? And so,
of course. Go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think people who think with Martin Luther King and him exposing racism, you can't expose something that's already out there. It was already out there. The world already knew about it, so that just does not work because nothing has happened in all this time since his death. I mean, there's been very little progress, and I do think I think it's better when black people were separated from white people. I think segregation worked, and it worked well. And I do think that it is something that black people should even think about for this day and time, because white supremacy.
You need land to be segregated. Now, the Nation of Islam always asks for the government to give them 100 acres of land. Now, you're still asking the white boy to give you something. So
instead of buying.
Well, you know what? Black people have money. They just mismanage their money. They can buy land.
They make bad business.
They can afford to buy land because they are one of the biggest. For somebody who's supposed to be a minority in this country, which then we're not a minority in the world, like they like to make people think. But black people have a lot of money. They have bad spending habits. So far as black people not being able to afford, that is just not true.
Right.
Because
so
I've
talk about
seen
this bad business deal. So you're referring to bad business deal, bad business management. That's why I go back to this education of the fact that we spent so much time trying to be a part of the system, as he said, and we fight our social issues and trying to get them to accept us as being black, that we haven't developed any business knowledge. White people have a thing called dynasty or trust, where they got that old money that passed down through dynasties. It's like the Rothschilds, whatever. So their trust, and we might get a little will of trust that go to the next generation, but they got stuff from old money that they got from slavery, from stuff, and it's a dynasty. It just goes on and on and on. So they developed their wealth.
But guess what? They built, a lot of them, they built their fortunes and those dynasties, as you call them, off the backs mm-hmm. of black people who are enslaved and from free labor.
I understand that,
so
what I'm saying. We're talking about,
I mean, it's
we're talking about the financial aspect.
Say, like, oh, we need to do like them. Okay, maybe if
that's the case, we need
to enslave them and put them to work.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that they had the business sense to do something like that. Now, what black would be different now? I'll go back to Ice Cube. Now, Cube had the good intention, but like you said, there were a lot of black people out there. Why are you going to go to Donald Trump and them folks when you could have sit down at the round table with all these rich black people, okay, and come up with an economic empowerment program? So his intention was good. I mean, I have no problem with his intention, but his approach was incorrect.
Well, I think black people's approach was incorrect by voting for Biden, who they just gave away their vote for free, and how he disrespected black men when he was running, and which he did.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of them that turned around and voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he lost more black men voters as far as
being a Democrat.
The sisters
put him over.
And number two, I don't
over.
Trust him. And I think he will renege on everything. Black people have a problem of always saving white America.
I don't think you should trust
any of them. And then they turn around and slap him in the face.
I don't think you should trust any of them, like I say. But you're in their system and you're in their world, and you got to deal with it.
Well, you know what? We might be in their system. It's not their world. They want people to believe it's their world. But people need to change. Black people need to change their mindset.
I mean, they've been saying this
for anybody to say it's their world. See, you didn't fail for their propaganda.
No. It's not that you fall for their propaganda. What I'm saying, when I say their world, I'm talking about their system. The system they have set up is worldwide, okay? And it's based
colonial
on white supremacy. Yeah, your colonial system is still there, even though you got some freedom, some physical freedom, but you do not have economic freedom. You do not have economic liberation, be able to compete in the world market as a group of black folk, Africans, that now Africa right now is 54 countries have put together the largest free trade zone in the world. They also have dealt with created BRICS, which is Russia, China, South Africa, and India. And so they're supposed to be dominate the economic market in a few years. But this is what I'm trying to say. So what can African Americans do in terms of if they still fighting somebody who want to blow up Black Wall Street and all these things? Now, those things have changed. So now you got the internet, you can communicate with everybody. So the question is, how are you reaching out to the world or even to people in your community and develop economic relationships as opposed to fighting and shooting each other and these kinds of things? Now, we do have a lot of blacks are doing it. Magic Johnson, he's doing stuff, but he's still dealing with white folks, okay? They got the businesses, they got the money that they're loaning, but if you flip that and you got Africa loaning you the money, the African bank loaning you money, and your relationship and your international freight and all your cargo and stuff and stuff you sell in the United States is from Africa, made in Africa, sold in the United States. Now you draw in some money.
Okay, that's just like
because,
the black banks here. Or look
right,
at the
exactly.
church. I want to
exactly.
go to religion. That's a problem because there is millions of dollars a week
mm-hmm.
that the black
mm-hmm.
church just collect
mm-hmm.
from their congregations, and they put that money in the white banks,
yep.
and black people who go to their church, who belong to that church, can't even go into the bank and get a loan because they're loaning this black money
mm-hmm.
to white people to invest, to do whatever they want to do, whatever they're going to do.
Okay.
So black people need to change their mindset, their money out of white banks, put them in a black bank, somewhere that they can go. Because if the church, its members can't even go in there and get a loan from a bank, they don't need to have their money in that bank. And I don't believe that black people should shop nowhere that they can't be hired.
There were some churches that
developed.
If you go
into an establishment and they want to hire black people, you shouldn't even have your money in there. Let white people patronize them. That's what they put in there.
There were some churches that developed credit unions a while back, trying to capture that, as you talked about. But so many of the people they loaned the money wouldn't pay the money back, and so a lot of them went under. So this is what I mean by not having the economic knowledge and integrity to deal honestly with a black person. So you got to be able to, just like you deal honestly with the white man, because he'll take your stuff on you. I mean, you got to be able to do that with black businesses and the whole thing. So I just don't think we have right now, and not all. I can't in general say that in the hood. Now I'm from the hood. In the hood,
well,
we have that kind of integrity. Okay, I grew up in the hood, and in the hood, and I go to church at Allen Temple down in Oakland, and in the hood, this church, now we feed folks, we do coronavirus, we do all this kind of stuff. We had a credit union, all do all this kind of stuff, but we had to close the credit union because people didn't want to pay the money back. So you got to overcome that kind of neglect in our community, and I just think that comes from, as he said,
you got to do due diligence if you're going to loan money anyway, just like anybody else. I don't mean this because somebody went to go get a loan. You got to make sure they qualify, that they have assets. They got to do what they're supposed to do.
Anybody
that wouldn't do their due diligence anyway was going to fail.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
See, the white system always said you got to have collateral and what have you. And maybe what the black credit unions were trying to do, it's like, okay, try to give this black family or this black individual a chance to develop his or her business and what have you. Mm-hmm. We're not going to think like the white institutions. We're going to be different. We're going to give our people a chance. But because of self-hatred, you know, when you talk about integrity, we didn't pay the loan back, or we took that money and started doing businesses with white institutions or whatever, instead of doing businesses in our black communities. And another reason why, and then we're going to move on to the church. Another reason why our black communities are failing, we have a lot of black professionals, black skilled labor moving out of them. And what do you leave behind? Less productive individuals, you know, creates a negative, what you call early spirit, a negative atmosphere, and what have you. You know.
Now let me ask you a question: How do I fold the field as a businessman? And I'm going down in the hood, and I see brothers hanging on the corner, look like zombies. Now, do I fold, like you say, feel, but I'm going to give him a chance, go up to this cat who I know on drugs and offer him a job?
No, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Right. So,
I mean, but if you have a brother coming out of prison that have a skill with, let's say I own a mechanical shop, all right, and this brother came out, just came home, all right, and he's showing that he's not hanging with his ex crew or anything. He wanted to be sincere and change his lifestyle. I give that brother a shot. That's what black businesses, the difference between a black business and a white business. That white business is not going to give him a shot right away. You damn near got to be living in a tent before he gives
you
a shot.
Oh, you messed up once you get a... You get convicted of something, you're messed up. Now, a lot of black churches have what I call prison ministries, and they do exactly what you said. And some of the brothers come out of there and be great. And there have been a couple that stole the money that was collected in the plate, you know, from the charity department. So not all cases are bad, not all cases are good. But like I said, some churches have these prison ministries do that. But as you say, black businesses, and so now, even some of the white businesses are beginning to do this because they're realizing
because they get what is called this re-entry tax credit program.
Right.
If you hire someone that's straight out of, you know, you get some tax free. You know, I'm not an accountant, so I really don't know. But
yeah,
they get tax credits for behind someone that's coming out of prison. That's the only reason. And if they not doing because they're good souls, believe me.
Oh no, they want something out of it. But at least they're doing it, and whatever reason that they're doing it. But what I'm saying is that the way they got it set up now, and you come out and you're a brother that you know you didn't repent it or whatever you want to call it, and got yourself together. You know, you got a felony. You can't even get a job. You know, your whole life, man, it's like going in the military and get a dishonorable discharge. Nobody want to hire you, right? So now you're back in a situation where you want to live, you want to eat. You might get back out there and gang bang and do some stuff.
And that's what they want. It's called, and let me tell you something, we keep the prison system. Right. And they got a seat on the stock exchange, man.
Right.
Department of Correction Association have a seat and had it for close to 20 years, thanks to Biden. You know, it's a corporation and they deal with other corporations like Microsoft, the Bill Gates boy, you know, so the Apple, it's 25 cents an hour. To fix their product, and they're learning the skill, but will they be able to use the skill on the outside of the walls?
Well, you know what? I'm going to say yes, because I had a brother who went to jail at the age of 21 on a drug charge. My brother got out in federal. He went to jail on 2 counts of conspiracy. He never actually got caught with drugs, but people were saying, he did this. So they said it takes more than one person for it to be a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. My brother got out of prison. While he was there, he went to school for heating and air.
Great job.
And got a degree with it. He got out. He got him a job in construction, and they do hire felons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now he has his own company. He has his own construction company. He's building houses and everything and doing great. Built his own house. It's paid for. Everything. And I know other people that have went to prison, got out, didn't go back to that old life, that are doing great.
Now I know your mom taught you to help those who help themselves, right?
Yeah.
Who's trying to help themselves. Help those trying to help themselves. Now, there are a lot of blacks who want to do something, you know, and so I was always taught you get your blessings by helping somebody. So if I see someone trying to help themselves, I'm going to help them. That's just the way I was raised. But I don't know if everybody's like that. But when you go out there and you see, like I say, the brother, he got the pants hanging way down to the ground. He look like a zombie on the drug, the old thing. He ain't trying to help himself. He got a hand out and begging. I don't feel like I want to help him. So we got to get beyond that. We got to be able to clean this brother up. And it ain't just clean the clothes. It's cleaning that mind up. We got to get the mind
square
away. That's
where organizations like the Nature of Islam come in. They're not afraid to go on those corners and say, yo, brother, why don't you join this program? Why don't you come a part of this program? And start teaching them about self-worth and what have you. Because we can't be elitist. You can't be an elitist. Oh, man, he got his pants hanging down. Oh, he's slinging or whatever. You can't be an elitist because, hell, that could have been you. That could have been you 20 years ago. It had to be brothers that would reach out and say, look, man, there's a program over here and what have you. And that brother start coming every day learn about self-worth, learn about alternative behaviors, what have you.
Right, he's trying to help
himself. You got a success story.
Well, he's trying to help himself, so right on, you want to help him. But if you tell him all this and he ain't doing no movement at all now, you can't spin your wheels with it now.
Hey, well, you know, we're going to lose some in the battle. You know, that's what war is all about. You win some battles, you lose some battles.
You heard the phrase that the struggle continues, right?
Right.
Right. So when we talk about that God trance that God put Adam in the garden, I mean, I related to black men and the black people in that movement, we went into this trance. So you say the word God and everybody just flip. You know, they go into emotional trance and they lose the common sense. Okay? Now, I have nothing wrong with spirit. I believe in spirit quite a bit. But what happens is that when you're in a institution like Christianity or even Islam, whatever, and they both have a history of abuse and using it to achieve political agenda, right? Besides people like Islam that's trying to help people, whole thing. And they have helped some people. But
they help a whole lot.
Right. So when you have a movement that we call the black movement, or we call the civil rights, whole thing, we have a movement. And then you got a movement over here of white folks that believe in a different kind of Jesus, that believe in a macho, masculine Jesus kicking ass with a gun and he ready to kill. And you believe in sweet Jesus over here that they gave you a long time ago. He peaceful, loving, and the old thing, he don't want to fight. So now you got a problem. So when you run across John Wayne and Jesus, which they push, and they use Trump was, he fit that mold, John Wayne fit that mold, the whole thing. And you sit over here talking about a truth crushed to earth will rise again. Everything they ever done in history, you go back to Congress, it was for the money. It was all for the money. They enslaved you for the money. They put the drugs on the street for the money. Everything is for the money. And we fall right into it.
Do you feel, is there a relationship between Christianity and racism?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Christianity was a big proponent of racism. Now, evangelicals, just use Oral Roberts, use Jimmy Swagger. We use who is this? It's Jimmy Falwell, the moral majority.
Let's look at Cephalo Dollar. Let's look at just like I'll talk about the black principles and the black teachers. Well, let's look at Cephalo Dollar. Let's look at TV.
But you talking about prosperity? You talking about prosperity preachers now? See, these prosperity preachers is concerned. They gonna put out a word, but they want to get paid. Okay. Now we come from a whole different idea. Come from a whole different what I call a sweet Jesus Baptist religion, where you know your hands up and you shouting and you doing all these kind of things, and you going home on Sunday, but on Monday and stuff, you know, you're doing all whatever you want to do. So, but that Jesus was not what I call a supposed. Now they were, they got the Cadillacs and all that kind of stuff, but the way they presented it to you, it wasn't about you. You're talking about King Narcissus. You remember King Narcissus? King Narcissus was a preacher in Oakland who he wore red robes, had a Rolls Royce, and people used to roll out the red carpet. So we've seen all these kinds of things. But these are guys just playing for the money. These are black people. But I'm taking it over to the evangelicals and the white Protestants and people like that who utilize it as though they are trying to save you from your savagery, as they said in the Congo, and the whole thing, mess up your whole system to make
back
you.
Back in the 1600s, yeah. Michelle, I know you got a question for Brother Smith. I know you got a question on this subject.
Right, because those same people you talking about saying that they trying to save black people from their savagery,
right.
White people are
right.
The most barbaric people in the world.
History proved that.
Right.
Proved that.
So I don't understand why black people want to emulate them. I think that Christianity and racism go hand in hand, because I don't think you can have Christianity without racism.
Well, you know, they used to beat you up,
because they're so
convert you to Christianity. Yeah, they used to beat you up, convert you to Christianity. Back in the day, you're the African, you couldn't even come. Unless you was a Christian, the whole thing. When they got here, they brand you and gave you instructions.
That's the problem.
So that means you've had.
When you sit up there and practice the same religion that the people who enslaved your ancestors, there is.
And you know
problem.
This. Yeah.
There is a serious problem.
Well,
because everything they teach you is to love your enemy.
Yeah.
And they look at you like an enemy, but they don't love you. They don't hide it. Number one, and also white supremacy, the majority of white preachers are white supremacists.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go right ahead. Go ahead, go ahead. Right, go
okay.
Ahead.
So when a black person who's all docile, praying on their knees, well, they're getting a hell beat out of them, and they say they want to be, they try to act like white, they need to act like those savages and fight back, like them barbarians.
You sound like Malcolm X on Martin Luther King about that very thing. So,
I feel about it because I don't agree with the way, but look at Martin, I don't agree with Martin Luther King's tactics because one of them slapped me, I'm going to slap the hell out of them. I'm going to try to smack their face off. That they going to kill us from 100 generations
Martin
back.
Martin don't want you to be laid on the
railroad
track.
Well, Martin was changing in his last days. He was changing.
Right.
You know, thank you, Stokely Carmichael. He was changing. Well, we're running out of time. Brother Smith.
Oh, man, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. And I didn't even finish with the questions, but I invite you back sometime next year so we can finish up and everything.
Okay.
I thank you for coming on the show. And you and your family have a good holidays.
Same to both of you guys. Thank you.
All right.
Bye bye.
Well, folks, that's it. You know, goodbye to 2020. Hello, 2020. Next time you hear my voice, it will be January 5th, 2021. And I just want to thank some people. You know, I want to thank Carter Steve. I want to thank Wayne Young. And I want to thank you, Michonne. I want to thank you for coming on with me and doing this. Because, like my man said, the struggle continues. Just because the
talk. I want to thank you for the opportunity.
Huh?
I said thank you for the opportunity.
Great. What you going to talk about tomorrow night?
Black issues.
Of course. Of course. Abby Heck, you know, one of the few black radio networks that focus on the solutions in the black community. And I know there are people that download this program and listen to it. What black stuff they going to talk about now? Yo, you better be talking about this black stuff. You better talk what that lady said last week. Why you always got to talk about black stuff and everything? 1111.
Right.
We have to. Because we
you know what?
See,
I don't know
about,
what fantasy land she stays in.
If we stop talking, we'll stop building. If we stop building, we'll stop existing. If we stop existing, you know, we are already losing we have already lost a couple of generations, whether it's to substances or whether it's to trying to be like the enemy. We lost a lot of black folks trying to be like the enemy, you know, and we just got to continue to fight. The fight and having these programs teaches me. I learn stuff every single week. You know, this stuff I want to do next year because I learned it on having this platform. You know, so yes. So I think
I've learned a lot.
I thank everybody, you know. And I see y'all next year. And I'm out of here. As always, I am
hold it now.